You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweet Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken is my co-host. Ken, what's going on?
Oh, it's going, Lynn. It's going. I'm so happy to be here for this episode of the Sweet Spot Podcast.
Episode
368. 368. That's hard to believe, Lynn. That's quite an accomplishment.
It is. And also, and Ken and I are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we talk Disneyland. And we're also authors of the books Cleaning the Kingdom. We have two volumes out. You can get both of those on our website at thesweetspot.com or on Amazon, or where digital copies are found, and audio books also. We also have a Patreon. If you'd like to help support our show, we'd really appreciate it. It helps pay for some of the bills, and there are some great perks that you get to as part of that. So one of the things is you get to get one bonus episode delivered to you once a month, and then also you get to join us once a month for our current events live, where you get to join in the chat room, and we'll add some of your comments sometimes to the discussion. And it's a lot of fun. So you can go over to our website, thesweetspot.com, and look for the Patreon link, or go to Patreon and search The Sweet Spot that way. But it's for $5 or more a month, you get those great perks. And if you don't want to do that, but you still want to try to help, you can always just donate a dollar, because every dollar helps, every cent helps us to pay what we need to. Ken, who is our guest tonight?
I don't know, Lynn. No.
Oh.
We actually have an artist named Ryan Batchelor. And Ryan used to work at the Disneyland Resort in attractions and in show support. So we're going to discuss that with him and hear some stories from him. And I'm looking forward to that. So that'll be good.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So let's get right into that. Looking to book a vacation to Disneyland Resort, Walt Disney World Resort, Disney Cruise Line, Disney Alani, Disneyland Paris, Adventures by Disney, Universal Studios Hollywood, Universal Studios Orlando, then I can do that for you. If you contact me and we can talk about all the different options and dates, and we can kind of even make recommendations on which days might be the best for you to go. And also as a complimentary, when you book with us, we will book your dining for you if you'd like, special events. And we also, when we book a vacation for you, we just don't say have a good time after we book it for you. We are there every step of the way. We contact you before your trip to make sure everything's squared away. We even have a checklist to make sure that you have everything you need. Reservations, dining, all these different things. Your transportation, if you need help with that from the airport. Any of those sort of things, we can help you with that too. We want to make the vacation the best it can be for you, because I know that vacations aren't cheap, and we can help you do that. So if you contact me, that's Lynn, and the email is lbarron@concierge.com. That's LBARRON at concierge.com, or you can go to thesweetspot.com, and there's a link on our front page there. You can click on that, and there's information on how to contact me. But I'd love to talk to you and help you book the best vacation possible. So, Ryan, did you grow up going to Disneyland as a child, or was it something that came along later in life?
No, absolutely. You know, my parents actually met working at Disneyland. My dad was a portrait artist in New Orleans Square, and my mom worked in New Orleans merchandise, so like the hat shop and the perfume shop and all that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So they met there, and, you know, ever since I can remember, I've been going to trips to Disneyland with my family, and they would always take us to New Orleans and show us where they worked. And that's still a fun thing to always go there, take pictures, kind of talk about the times when they worked there and, you know, how they met Roy Disney in the souvenir shop. I guess a one of a kind shop that is now like the Haunted Mansion Night Before Christmas store.
Right.
So, definitely, Disney really runs my family for sure.
Yeah, it seemed a natural fit for you to go to work at Disneyland. When did you hire in?
Yeah, well, you know, I always wanted to work at Disney. I was really a big fan of Imagineering. I kind of wanted to be an Imagineer. Did my senior papers about Imagineering. So right after high school, when I was 18, I hired in the fall of 93 in the West Side Attractions. But I worked guest control on Fantasmic only for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And then finally got trained on Jungle Cruise as my first attraction. And then just worked various attractions throughout, you know, the West Side.
Very good. Yeah. So Jungle Cruise, obviously a lot of stories to talk about right there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the best was before Indiana Jones, because at nighttime, most people didn't think the ride was open. So we got away all kinds of stuff on Jungle Cruise. That was a great ride to work at night. And during the day, you know, not so much, but like at night it was fun. We always did joke, like, you only had so many trips in you. Some guys have 500, 5,000 trips in them. Some guys have 5 trips and then they're over it. You know, like monotony of it really got to some people. Once you do like 20 some trips a day for an 8-hour shift. But yeah, we had a lot of fun there.
What was some of the, you know, when you're sitting around talking with people, go, oh, really? You worked at Disneyland? Jungle Cruise? What, you know, is there anything funny or interesting that happened?
You know, there's a lot of really good stories. One of the coolest things I think I did was the Indiana Jones private party. You know, Indiana Jones opened, they actually closed down Adventureland during the day when the guests were still there. Mm-hmm. They closed all of Adventureland and they had it all catered, and they had probably the most celebrities I've ever seen come to an event at Disneyland for the opening of Indiana Jones. And then Jungle Cruise is also open. And we had like 2 boats running or something like that. And they did like an Indiana Jones stunt show out there where they had 2 skiffs, little boats. One had Indiana Jones and like a female actor who was, you know, like with him. And then the other was a bad guy. Actually, not to get back, but the bad guy had the girl. Indiana Jones was chasing after him. And they had a, you know, all stage, and you would go out into the African veldt, and they had a tech out in the jungle start playing Indiana Jones music. And then the skiff would come flying around you, and this guy had a gun, and he was shooting off shots. And then Indiana Jones came flying around, and he's chasing after the guy. It was pretty cool. And that's something they just did just for that private party.
Okay, I was going to say, so that was just for the party. That's cool.
Yeah, because you'd never do that during normal operation, because we only run like 2 boats, because they had to cycle and reset by Schweitzer Falls every time a boat came through.
Mm.
You know, to do that. But it was pretty fun. We had a bunch of, you know, celebrities come on. The best was like Eddie Murphy, because, you know, you have Eddie Murphy on your boat, and you're like, oh my God, I can't make any jokes, it's Eddie Murphy. So you would like say a joke, and his whole group would kind of sit there and look at him, and he would laugh, and then they would all laugh. It was kind of funny. Like and one of the best scenes ever was you know, Carrie Fisher was there, and this one skipper was all, oh, I know you, you're in that one movie. And she's kind of staring at him. He's, don't tell me you're in that big movie, that huge blockbuster movie. And she's all, Star Wars. He's all, no, that's not it. And he's thinking to himself, he's all, oh, Blues Brothers. You were in Blues Brothers. and she started laughing. But yeah, that was great. I mean, there was like every celebrity was there. It was insane. There's Arnold Schwarzenegger was there. You know, like people I'd never seen at a Disney event before were there for the Indiana Jones party.
And you were on Jungle Cruise that night, you said, or?
Yeah, I was working on Jungle Cruise.
Yeah.
I don't know how I lucked out. There's only a few of us that, you know, got scheduled to work that. But it was a lot of fun. And then you know, later that I think the party closed in the evening and they reopened Adventureland for the day guests and they could come on and go on Jungle Cruise, like, you know, normal operation. But Indy, of course, didn't open until like the next week or something like that.
Right.
So they had Jungle closed for a little while, right? While they were building Indy.
Yeah. You know, they had that first turn, you know, the rare hornbill about to become more rare where the crocodile's coming up, like he's going to bite it. Yeah, that whole little kind of horseshoe kind of U-turn right there that they took out that became right. the Indiana Jones queue.
So Jungle Cruise, I mean, we could just do a whole episode just talking about your time on Jungle Cruise. Was, you know, we've had other skippers on and I've listened to others on other podcasts and they always talk about, you know, the different warning, you know, you give with the gunshots, like the different time, you know, different shot, how many numbers equal, you know, different things, incidents. Did you ever have to use that for anything?
Yeah, well, the big one was a derail. If you derailed the boat, you would fire off 6 shots. And then I'm trying to remember, I think a mechanical problem was 3 shots and a medical issue was 2 shots. I don't remember, but the big one was the 6 shots and you had the special ammo, like the heavier ammo that was louder if you broke down like that. And I actually never derailed, but I was there during, you know, a derail. And there's some parts of the river, I'm sure the guys have talked about it. Like it's usually going into and out of the Hipple Pool because of the change depth of the water. If you go too fast and then you try and go in reverse and slow down really quick, the weight created from the boat can sometimes lift you off the track. There's also other issues. Like I'll tell you one story. We had this like, at one point we used to have leads on the attractions and then they got rid of leads. And then you had assistant managers and assistant managers came in from all these different departments, other companies, but they got very minimal training, on the attractions. So this is, you know, kind of like the politics of the attractions, right? So like we had this assistant manager on the attraction, didn't really know what he was doing, was trying to throw the track switches to, bring a boat on, you know, nobody was going to help him because they got rid of leads and everybody's like, okay, well, you're the manager. This is, you know, you do it. And he had all green lights to bring a boat on. He had amber lights and red lights, and it was all a big mess. And he told this guy to bring on the boat anyways. And everybody's like, well, okay, he's the manager. And this guy drove the boat in, and he just kind of did this kind of, you know, bounced around through the track switch area and to unload. And we're like, oh my gosh, you know, that boat's totally off the track. There's no way he's not on the track. And he said like, hey, all right, well, if it makes any noises out there, you know, we'll pull it off. We're like, man, that is the worst decision I've ever heard in my life. but you know, we were okay, you know, and lesson needs to be learned here. So we loaded the boat and the boat went out and we're just sitting there waiting and he got about to the elephant pool and he fired off his 6 shots and we got John another boat. We went out there and he did like a full 180, like his rear guide was off and he almost spun the boat around. That was one of the craziest things I've seen there. Wow. You know, like that was pretty good. The ride was like down for like an hour.
Oh my.
Sounds similar to Custodio. We never got rid of leads, but I know they wanted to at one point. And we had a manager that fought for it to keep them. But yeah, we've had plenty of managers that didn't know Custodio and were hired into it.
Yeah, and I don't like, I guess, get too much into that, but that was a lot of the stories when I was there. That was a whole kind of era in attractions where they got rid of leads, prices and managers in, and then eventually leads came back, which is a very good thing.
Yeah, when the head of our custodial fought that, I mean, he ended up looking like a genius because, you know, they started bringing leads back to the other operations departments, and we never had gotten rid of ours. Yeah. I like to say the more things change, the more they get back to the way they were before, you know.
We used to do, we just do these private parties, that pretty funny story from Jungle Cruise. It was called the Search for Simba. And we'd get 45 stuffed Simba dolls and we would hide them all throughout the jungle. And all the guests had flashlights and they had to find these Simba dolls. So, you know, back then we had the old boats and the old boats, if you remember the cushions, were like these big wood planks and they were removable. Like now it's all just, you know, wood, you know, seating, but they used to have cushions in the Jungle Cruise boats. So we would go out and we would remove those cushions, which are these big boards, and use them as planks to run across from the boat to the islands. We'd run around and hide all these Simba dolls. So you know, we had one like hanging upside down next to the lion, and the management didn't like that because it was like he was dead. I threw one in one of the hippo's mouth. So every time the hippo would come out of the water, open his mouth, there's this soggy, wet Simba doll in there. Mm-hmm. I guess nobody saw that one because they left that one alone. It stayed there all night. But then somebody put a Simba doll in the skirt of Trader Sam. So it was sticking out of his skirt. And management saw that and said, oh, yeah, you guys got to take that down. So I back up the boat. And this guy, this is at nighttime before we're going to open. And this guy jumps off the boat onto the island, grabs a Simba doll away from Trader Sam. And he turns around. He's like, oh, man, I can't make this jump. It's like the footing's weird here. I can't make this jump. And I'm like, well, can you walk back to the dock? You know, like he's like, yeah, sure. So I threw him a flashlight. And we go back to the dock and we see this flashlight and it gets closer and it gets farther away and it gets closer and it disappears. So we're like, oh man, he got lost. He doesn't know how to get back to the dock. So we drive another guy back there. He jumps out with a flashlight. And the same thing, we watch the flashlight get closer, farther away, closer, and then it's gone. We're like, oh man, now he's lost. And now we have to open the park, you know, for this private party. And the first boat goes into the you know, the lost city there, and both those guys are in the lost city by the tiger, like waiting for a ride. They jumped on the boat and rode the boat in because they couldn't figure out how to get back to the dock. I guess it was too overgrown. Wow. Was...
So what other what did you get trained on after that?
Yeah, so usually, you know, jungle will be the first ride you get trained on because it needed the most people to staff it. So what you do jungle. And then after jungle, I got a Thunder Mountain, and Thunder Mountain was great. And I love Thunder Mountain. Worked numerous summers on Thunder. Thunder was great. And then I learned the Mark Twain Riverboat. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it was Tiki Room and Bear Band. And that's basically what I knew for years. And then eventually they brought back like river leads, you know, for the day river. So I became a river lead for day operation. And then I got trained on Fantasmic, and I did both the Mark Twain and the Columbia for Fantasmic, and was a lead on Fantasmic as well. And for people who don't know, you know, the Columbia and the Mark Twain are still considered attractions. So even though they're in the Fantasmic show, they still need attraction cast members on. So attraction cast members actually drive the Columbia during Fantasmic. And then we're on the Mark Twain just kind of as deckhands, kind of helping out during the Mark Twain run. And the engineer still runs the Mark Twain.
You said you enjoyed Big Thunder. Why is that?
Well, Thunder was great because, you know, you're outdoors. There's lots going on. It's not one of those kind of slower attractions, mm-hmm. you know, a roller coaster. And then you're always working around. There's always great crews out there, great people to work with. And then you always like dressing like a cowboy. That was a lot of fun. And every once in a while, you have a downtime and you have to run around the mountain and, you know, reset brake zones and lifts. And, you know, that was a good time. It was a lot of fun being out there during the summer. It was hot, but other than that, like, I worked on Haunted Mansion too. And Haunted Mansion, I mean, I love the Haunted Mansion attraction, all that, but working it, you're almost always by yourself. You know, you're in this big green box back there. It's dark. You know, I wear earplugs sometimes because, you know, the sound gets you once in a while. If you're stuck in that expanding room, 7 or 8 trips, everybody's screaming.
Yeah,
you know, it was fun. I mean, I did have some fun on it, but it wasn't an attraction I wanted to be stuck on for long periods of time. And I worked on it before they did the, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas makeover.
Right.
All right. Yeah. Started.
Now the attraction has to be down twice a year, you know, installation and removal. Mm.
Yeah, I never had. I always people have ghost stories from the Haunted Mansion. I never had any, you know, issues or saw or heard anything. And I closed that attraction for a while, where I would walk the track by myself, looking for hats or anything like that. Never had any kind of. I mean, it's creepy walking around in there, but I know people. There's certain ghosts people have claimed to see. I was a young kid, I think, that some people have seen walking around the Haunted Mansion, and yeah, I never had any run-ins with that when I was there.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, it is spooky if all the sound and animation going walking around there by yourself. But other than that, like, I don't have any ghost stories from it.
Yeah, I've heard about those too, but don't know any from the mansion. Yeah. So, what were some of the you know, some of the fun things that happen when you were working on the river.
Oh man. You know, the craziest thing that happened working on the river was, you know, we drive these rafts and some people think these rafts are on tracks, but they're not, they're actually, you know, free floating. Like the only boats on a track or it's on a guide rail is the Mark Twain and Columbia, but the canoes, the rafts, the keelboats, when they're out there, those are all free floating and, you know, the operator actually drives them. So on the rafts, you know, we'd be, you know, packed with guests. You come in, you're coming at a lot of speed. And sometimes these ducks, you think they learn, but sometimes they want to sit and, you know, swim around the dock when you're coming in with a full load of guests. And you yell at them and you clap your hands and they're just sitting there freaking out. So there's one time we're coming in to the island dock super fast, super hard, full load of guests. And it was a mud hen. It was out there. It was just spinning around, didn't know what to do. And all these people were screaming and the kids are screaming. And I'm like, oh man, we're totally going to just destroy this mud hen right in front of all these people. So I was what was called the deck watch person where I wasn't driving. I was standing on the front of the raft. So I ran over there, took my, those straw hats on, those Tom Sawyer straw hats, took that hat off. And I kind of leaned over the raft and I scooped it down the water. And I just barely got that mud hen before the raft hit the dock. And I threw him up in the air and he kind of spun around head over heels and went into a big pile of those reeds that are on the side of the river. And then the raft, you know, hit the dock and I had to grab arms. I almost fell off the raft. And then everybody sat there and it was kind of silent. And then everybody started cheering. And like, you know, and I was shaking my hand and like pat me on the back. And I actually got 3 guest compliments at a city hall for saving the life of this mud hen.
Oh my.
And my hat was all wet. I put my hat back on. But yeah, it was pretty crazy. But like, but yeah, the river was a lot of fun. There's a lot of interesting about the river is, you know, there's no computer systems. Like all the attractions, you have these computer systems, you have sensors, you have all these other things. On the raft, on the river, it's just, you know, it's just a bunch of boats and it's all this, you know, a bunch of the ride operators operating them. So you have a lot more potential for things to get, you know, get weird and go wrong. And we had one time where a canoe tried to pass the Mark Twain and they got wedged between the Mark Twain and the island. This is on the, you know, Thunder Mountain side of the island, and if you look at the Mark Twain, when it turns, the fantail, the paddle wheel gets really close to the island. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, now the canoes aren't allowed to pass the big boats at all. But back then, those guys were, you know, would pass the boats all over the place. But they got wedged between the island and the Mark Twain, and the actual arm that turns the paddle wheel was hitting the canoe. Ooh. So, like, people were jumping out of the canoe because they thought this. It was like an Indiana Jones movie. It was just boom, boom, boom. Here comes this, you know. This harm of the paddle was, and it, all this grease is flying everywhere, and people were screaming, and just like everybody was fine, and then nobody got hurt. But it was just kind of an intense moment for a little bit, just because they got this canoe wedged into the spot it was supposed to be. And there's a lot of reasons why, you know, things are operated the way they are now. Because things, there's like the Big Thunder Falls. One guy's got a canoe underneath Thunder Falls, and, you know, sunk it.
Yeah.
No, full of water. That's actually a great story. One of the old leads of Jungle Cruise, we had a little skiff boat you would take out there to do animation checks and all that. And he went out in the skiff and he was gone. Nobody saw him. Nobody knew where he was. And somebody's going out in their boat. They're approaching Schweitzer Falls. And there's the lead you know, basically in the water up to his chest, just standing there in the river. And the skipper's like, hey, how's it going? And he's all fine. He's all, where's the skiff? He's all, I'm standing in the skiff. And I guess he tried to go underneath Schweitzer Falls to cut that gap. And he got hung up on the rocks. And before he could do anything, the skiff filled full of water from the waterfall and sunk to the bottom.
Oh, boy.
You know, stuff like that made, you know, working there fun. Especially on, you know, like the River and Jungle Cruise were two of the ones that had the most potential, I think, for like weird things to happen. Because, again, there's no computer systems. There's no sensors. It's got a bunch of, you know, young jackass kids in boats driving around. So like, yeah, but it was a lot of fun.
What about the keelboats?
Yeah, you know what? When the keelboat flipped, I was actually working that day on the Mark Twain. Uh-huh. I left right before it happened. So it worked out pretty good for me. But I was working day Mark Twain. And the way it works is the guys who work Fantasmic, they come in around 5 o'clock and they take the last trip of the Mark Twain. The day guys leave. And the Fantasmic crew closes the boat out. So they came in and I left. And it was that next trip around for the Mark Twain is when the keelboat flipped over. And I don't know if you guys have done stories on that, but you know, there's like 40 some people on the boat or whatever. And for whatever reason, the boat tipped over and everybody went in the river, and that was the end of the kill boats. And there was a big push to bring those back after they were closed for a few years. And they were great. They're a lot of fun. I never got trained on one, but it was kind of like a Jungle Cruise boat out on the river, but you could drive it like a raft.
Yeah.
And, now I think, I know they have ones out there as decor elements. I'm not sure if those are the original kill boats just refurbished or if they made new ones. I just released one on display, I think, right now on the river. But
yeah, it looks like a remade one to me, but I don't know.
It's probably a refurbished one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, I knew what I was, because I was the custodial foreman in what was Adventure Frontier back then. And I knew, because I saw it there with my own eyes, and I said, I knew that that's it. That's the end of this. They're not going to run those ever again. You know, I just knew based on what had been happening at the park and the attractions that had been closed down over the years and stuff. I just said, that's it. They're done.
But that was great. When you have the Mark Twain, the Columbia, two rafts, the canoes and the keelboats all ran at the same time. I mean, that was a busy river.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was fun. Like those summers where everything running like that. And, you know, and everybody had to communicate, you know, like to make sure everything was actually, I got a good story about the Columbia, talking about communication. So we had to pull the Columbia stays in Fowler's Harbor, which is by Haunted Mansion for everybody doesn't know. And we would pull it out. It only runs for about 4 hours or so. The Mark Twain runs all day long, but on busy days, the Columbia sailing ship runs as well for day guests. So at a certain point of the day, we would pull the Columbia out of Fowler's Harbor and bring it back on the main line. And what you do is you would throw a track switch, which is at Fowler's Harbor. And the track switch is right around where the raft docks are. And you would tell the raft drivers, there's a hand signal, put your hands together for the Columbia's coming out. So I told the guys that the Columbia's coming out, they knew, and I'm having the Columbia out, I'm the lead, I'm backing the Columbia out, and they decide they're going to do one quick pass, really fast, of guests as the Columbia is backing out. I'm yelling at them, no, do not go, the Columbia's coming out, do not go. And this one guy, you know, he had his issues, he thought, you know, he was better than he really was driving, so they go flying out, and this guy's in such a hurry to leave. He leaves the bow line on the raft. He does what's called a rope check, where he goes full speed with the rope on. All the guests go flying forward and fall down and stuff. Uh-oh. At this point, I'm okay. Seriously, do not go. He gets all flustered. He pulls the rope off and he full speed takes off again. And I'm yelling at the Columbia guys now. I'm all stop the boat, you know, like go forward. And there's a tow hitch. It's underwater on the back of the Columbia. During Fantasmic, they put these big wood posts in the tow hitch in case they need to push the boat during the show if it breaks down. But during the day, you can't see it. It's under the water. And I saw the back of his raft, and he came within a foot of hitting that tow hitch. And his raft totally would have hit it, you know. So I'm sitting about ready to piss my pants. I'm like, dude, like, what is going on? And he slams into the dock, and so I go talk to him afterwards. I'm like, dude, don't do that. Like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I thought we could go. And I'm like, no, everybody can wait. It's fine. There was another time too. They were training somebody on the rafts too, because, you know, somebody, it's a human person who drives it. There was one person who's getting trained, and they hit the pylons on Fowler's Harbor. Between the river and the harbor, they T-boned that thing with the raft so hard. Like, I was on the main dock and I was like hugging onto the dock. I've never seen anybody hit something that hard, and everybody on the raft got depleted. Like, you just saw all the people on the raft just go flying forward as the raft spins around.
Oh no.
It was wild. I mean, nobody got hurt, it was pretty wild. I mean, there's some people that can get it, can understand, you know, the way to drive a raft. Some people just can't, you know, using the tiller and that's the way a raft drives, and using, the momentum of the raft as you dock. People just don't understand it sometimes.
And you said, because you worked on the river, you also had an opportunity to work Fantasmic and drive both of those.
Yeah. Fantasmic was great. Like, mm-hmm. Mark Twain, he really didn't do much. You just kind of, you know, stay out of sight. You know, you kind of get the ropes and, you know, move the chairs around, kind of help out. You're kind of a deckhand on the boat. And And you watch to make sure the tracks, you know, the track switch, if it's in the main side, the lights are green. So you want to look for those green lights, making sure the track switch is okay when you're doing your show pass. The Columbia, you actually were, you know, you're on the deck and you're driving. So you're actually in the show. And back then it was the Peter Pan version of the show.
Oh yeah.
So, which I like a lot more. I'm not really a big fan of the Jack Sparrow version they have now, but the Peter Pan show, you dressed basically the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction costume. And there's two of you as attraction operators. There's a driver in the back, and then there's the Hawkeye person in the front, who, again, is looking for the green lights, looking for anything in the river that might be an issue. And as a driver, you had a little Comtech earpiece, and the show director was, you know, calling out show calls to you, letting you know when to stop, when to go, things like that. And, you know, the Columbia goes, they had two different speed. You know, they had the day speed and the show speed. Show speed's a lot faster. And as your responsibility to get that boat out there and on and off stage on time. And then you had to do this show stop. And that was the craziest part of it, was you had to stop the boat on the small little dock for a ladder so we can get off. And we had markers on the island, so we kind of knew where to stop. But that was like a video game, like, you know, playing the throttle and just knowing exactly. And you did not want to overshoot. If you overshot, it was a big, huge ordeal. And there's a chance that performers couldn't get to the Mark Twain in time, so characters would get cut. So you did not want to be the guy who overshot the dock. That was like the one thing of your shift that you want to make sure you got right, was that show stop for the Columbia. But it was a lot of fun. And all kinds of crazy stuff happened on Fantasmic. I mean, and we can get into, like, you know, I transferred to show support after attractions, and show support's the entertainment side. They drive all the performance barges and the crocodile and all that. And I saw so many crazy things happen on that show in the time I was there. But one of the craziest things that happened on the Columbia, and I wasn't on the Columbia for this, but there's a rope swing. You know, the pirate would swing off the side of the boat on this rope. Mm-hmm. And there's only one point of the river where there's actually clearance for that to happen, and that's right in front of pirates. That's when the Columbia has a further distance from the seawall, you know, where the guests are. When the right. boat comes off Frontier Landing, the boat's right next to the seawall because it just, you know, came off the dock. And the stunt guys and all that, they don't know any of that. All they know is their cues. At least then this has changed. This is why this has changed. They just had a cue in the soundtrack, and that's when we do the rope, you know, swing. Now they have a light to look at as well, because one time the boat had some issues and it wasn't running at the proper speed, the show speed. So it was running a lot slower. So they were actually farther back when they were, you know, the cannon went off. It was making their big entrance on stage. And they were just coming off Frontier Landing when that music cue hit for the guy to do the rope swing. So he does the rope swing and he flies out like over the audience because they're right over the seawall. If I understand, the rope wrapped around one of the lampposts on the side of the seawall. So he did kind of like a tetherball kind of thing.
Oh no.
And he flew into the river. Luckily he flew in the river. He didn't like land on anybody on the seawall or anything. And they shut the show down, big e-stop, all the work lights come on and they're looking for this guy. And I guess the stuntman just swam back to the island and called the show, you know, producers from the islands. He didn't know where else to go, you know, like,
yeah.
And so, but that was pretty wild. So after that, I said, okay, from now on, you hear the cue and there's a certain light. And if you're lined up or past this light, then you're okay. If not, just cut the rope swing because you won't have the clearance to do it. Mm. But there's another time when I actually was driving. And we would always watch the rope swing to make sure he would come back, right? So I'm sitting there driving the boat, and I see him do the rope swing, and he just never came back. And I was like, all right, I just shut the boat off, you know? and I couldn't see it from my point of view, but I understand what he was hanging on the rope, and he did like he went right into the water. Uh-huh. You know, like he saw Three Amigos, and he does a rope swing, and he just hits the dirt and just goes sliding around on the dirt. He kind of just went straight to the water. I don't know how that happened. But then he had to climb up the side of the boat like Batman, you know, hold on to the rope. And then once he was back on, we had the clearance to go, and I, you know, put the boat back and forward and we drove off. Wow. But then the second show, he did the rope swing and he made it, and all these people in the crowd were cheering, and he kind of turned around and shook his fist at everybody, you know, that he made it the second time.
And the cannon goes off on cue also from the Columbia, right?
Yeah, there's two cannons. There's a special pyro cannon that's not there during day operation. And that's the first one that goes off. That makes that really loud boom.
Yeah.
That's a special cannon that the techs have. And then there's the smaller cannon that's used during day operation, which uses basically shotgun shells. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they actually had, stronger loads of powder that they used during the show to make a louder noise, for the show effect. And there's a funny story of that, because during day operation, one of the big jokes were, you have the captain, you have Hawkeye during day operation of the Columbia, and the Hawkeye would go, "Captain, have you seen my white bird?" And he's like, "No, I haven't seen your white bird. Has anybody seen my white bird?" And halfway around the river, he's talking about this white bird. And then when you pass the fort, you fire off the cannon. And what they would do is they would take one of these white Protows. I'm sure you guys know the Protows, because, that's all. And they would preset this Protow in the cannon before the trip starts, so the guests wouldn't see it. And he'd go over and he'd fire this cannon, and it would shred this Protow into a bunch of pieces, and it would all come fluttering back onto the, onto the deck like feathers. And then he'd go, "Captain, I found my little white bird." And that was a big joke they'd do during day operation. So one guy decided to do that during Fantasmic. He thought it'd be funny to stick this Protow, into the cannon, fire it off during the show pass. This is on his last day. He thought it'd be really funny. But he didn't realize that they use, this kind of thicker powder in the charges that, for the cannon for the show. So they fire the text, the one who fires the cannon off, he fires the cannon, out comes a Protow, on fire. It's a big fireball, and then all these brilliant pieces of Protow come blowing back onto the boat, and the stunt guys and techs are all running around stomping it out, and they're all freaking out and stuff. And he was pretty scared. Like when his show was over, he turned his name tag in, and he ran back to his car. He was afraid they were going to come after him.
Oh, but, boy.
Wow.
It was a good last day.
Yeah. So you said you went on from attractions to tech support and
Show support.
Show support. And
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so Fantasmic was part of that role.
Yeah, the show support department, if people don't know about it, it's basically what it says, that you support the show. So they basically drive all the floats for the parades, all the barges, Fantasmic were show support. They also do back of house trams for characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and that was a great department to work in. I mainly did that because you could work there part-time. It's much more flexible. When I was working other jobs, I could work there on the weekends. And I mainly did Fantasmic. I did Electrical Parade as well. But Fantasmic was the main role that I was working in show support, and it was driving the performance barges. So I drove all the barges, but the one I drove the most was the Mermaid Barge, which is called Barge 3. And during at that point, of the show, it was the King Louie barge for the Monkey Pass. It had the throne. Oh, that was the barge I would drive. And then the stone backing would come off, and it was the rock for the Mermaid during the Princess Pass. So that was my barge that I drove the majority of the time when I was there. And I also drove the crocodile, and the croc, chases the Columbia around. And this is the old croc, not the new. They had a new one after I left. It was much more animated. This was the old one that was much simpler, but it was fine. I enjoyed it. And but it had this made this TikTok noise. You had to wear earplugs when you're in there. So it was so loud. It would just echo inside there, this TikTok noise. But we had a lot of fun with that. The Columbia guys would always throw pennies at you and stuff when you're in the croc, off stage when you're, on the backside of the river, everybody's always screwing around. And once I was doing evasive maneuvers, trying to avoid all these things they're throwing at me. And I got one of my pontoons wedged up in the rocks of the old rapids they used to have back there. Mm-hmm. So I had to jump, I had to pop the hatch, jump out. And I was jumping up and down on these pontoons, trying to get them loose from the rocks. And the guys in the Columbia are all, laughing at me. It's the funniest thing they ever saw. And then I finally was able to get back into the croc and drive away. But yeah, it was great. We had a lot of fun, all the barges and the Columbia. It was great. I can't be there for a number of years doing that.
Fantasmic's a fun show. I mean, even just what we did was pretty interesting. But yeah, just the whole excitement, just that whole side of the park would just get really exciting at night.
Yeah, Fantasmic was a great show. It was unfortunate to see the dragon burn down.
Yeah.
We didn't have that dragon when I was there. We had the old dragon with the bigger head and the fabric wings and all that. But this new dragon I always thought looked amazing. I was kind of surprised how flammable it was for something that blows out fire. how fast that thing went up. But luckily, nobody was hurt, and I guess they're going to cut that from the show now. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah,
that's the word, is they're gonna remove that. But you know, we'll see what eventually happens.
Yeah, it sucks because I feel for all the people who work on the show, because now, you know, you're gonna go like a year basically of that show being down.
Yeah, true.
Hard to believe, but yes. You know, I mean, you come back from being shut down, you know, from you know, the whole park being shut down, the whole resort, and then you know, you don't get that much time back, and then this happens, and so yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, but I mean, it's a lot of hours, you know, not only in multiple departments, and everybody's involved in that show. It's a ton of hours throughout the summer and stuff. They're lost now, so that's. Yeah, it really sucks everybody's still there.
And also help distribute crowds around the park, you know, from people that wanted to wait for fireworks on Main Street or the parade. It just kind of, it would kind of distribute everyone differently, but yeah.
Hey, if you want, do you want me to talk about the training video I put together for Fantasmic?
Oh, yeah.
Let me segue into that. One thing I want to talk about, and I'm going to try and put this online eventually, but the last year I was there, I was learning a lot about 3D animation and graphics. I was trying to get into that industry. And at the time, they were trying to do a training video for Fantasmic, but because of the show and the way it works, you know, like Beyond the River, to try and get techs out there and camera crews and all that, this would be really, you know, difficult. So the GFM of the show knew I was doing this 3D animation stuff. And he asked me, hey, would it be possible to do a 3D animated version of the show for training? And I'm all, yeah, of course. So I had a meeting with some of the management, and I just made like a gray box, two cylinders on it for the barge. And I had a picture of Beauty and the Beast on it. And I had it on a spline, which is a path you can draw on the computer, you can attach an object to. And I just had that kind of going around for a little bit as a proof of concept. I attached different cameras. So I had a POV camera and a third person camera and like a master view camera. And I showed that to them, and they said, this is great. And they, you know, they approved it. So I got put on what's called like a special project for a few months. And they gave me all the blueprints for the river. And I actually, in this program called Maya, which is a 3D modeling program, I modeled the entire front of the river and the stage for the show, all based on the blueprints. All the light placement, got all that, because that was very important for the show passes. Modeled all that, and I got that all set up in Maya. And then I modeled all the performance barges, you know, the crocodile, the workboat, the three performance barges, all to scale. And I took a photo ref and all that, and you know, texture them with the photo ref. And we did a full DVD where you could, and it was all set to the, not only the soundtrack of the show, but also what the guests wouldn't hear is the show director calling out all the cues of when people were going to go, when boats start their path, when they stop. Doing all these show cues. So I had it all animated to that. And you could watch all the sequences of the two sequences of the show with the barges, but from every barge point of view. We had multiple camera views. We had the driver POV, we had third person, we had a top view, and we had the show director's view. And it was kind of a visual aid for the barge drivers to understand the show passes, the timing, placement, all that kind of stuff. And it went over pretty well. Like, it was a lot of fun. And it was that project that ultimately kind of launched my career in video games, doing what I'm doing now. That was my first kind of job doing, you know, 3D graphic work. And it's unfortunate because we only had it, you know, there at Disneyland. You know, I have the master DVD. I'm sure now whatever was at the park is probably gone. So the show's, you know, change, and all those people are gone now who used to work on the show. So I'm not sure if they even have their version of the DVD. But I was thinking about trying to get the barge models and maybe, you know, put them online somewhere. I mean, it's older. I mean, I wouldn't put them in my portfolio now because it's older work than I did. It's not, you know, but like, I mean, I can clean up a little bit and put them out somewhere.
Oh, but I'm sure there's still a lot of good interest for that, for sure. Yeah, I think you should be interesting.
Yeah, now the game engines, I can get it all to run in real time. Back then, I had those all renders coming out of Maya. But I can get to a game engine now and have the barges drive around and stuff.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
But yeah, that was like the last thing I did before I left.
That was when you were in show support.
Yeah, I was in show support. And after that, it went over pretty well and everybody was excited about it. And I kind of pitched it as doing the same kind of thing for attractions and for other, you know, safety videos and stuff. And I met a bunch of different people in the park, but ultimately decided not to do it. So eventually I got a job in video games and left the park after that.
Well, when you had come to the to work at the resort, you had you said you wanted to be an Imagineer, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I ask because pretty much the same for me. I mean, I had that when I first came to work at the park, I was 17. And I was still in high school. Actually, I was facing my senior year of high school. So and then in college I created my own major with, you know, with that goal in mind. Never happened though. eventually over the years I did have two interviews with Imagineering, but I must have been terrible. and but you know, life is what happens when you're making other plans, a wise man once said. And so, or a wise guy if you prefer, I don't know, but yeah, so I guess, you know, you were probably working on things while you were working at the resort, right? I mean, you were developing your skills and kind of looking at what the options were.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I forget if it was 96 or 97, but they had this Sorcerer's Apprentice workshop at the resort.
Uh-huh.
You guys remember that? It was one summer. Yeah. I got into that for Imagineering, and that was as close as I got to ever working for Imagineering, but there's like maybe 33 of us from the resort who got into this workshop for the summer. It was only a few weeks. And the thing was, you had still to work your 5 days as a cast member, and one of your 2 days off was this workshop. And basically, we were designing a new area in the park. And for the you know, the workshop, everybody had to design a certain attractions or shows or restaurants for a potential new area of the park. And that was kind of your test, I guess, you know, to this, uh-huh. You could, you know, get into Imagineering. So it was called the Isle of Illusion. And it was going to be behind Frontierland, like where, you know, Galaxy's Edge is now. And the idea was it was this big floating island that landed behind Frontierland. And it was all based on wizards and the art of illusion and all that kind of stuff. It was actually kind of a cool idea. And, you know, and so everybody in the you know, with different teams, and I got put on a restaurant team, which I wasn't very happy with at first. But after a while, I realized, well, you can do really cool stuff with, you know, a dining experience, you know, because everybody wants to make the attractions. But I got put on the dining team, the restaurant team, and we had this, the concept we came up with was called the Smoke and Mirrors Restaurant. And it was Cyril Smoke and Mandrake Mirrors, and they were the inventors of the art of illusion. And this is their restaurant, and they both had their own section of the restaurant. There's paintings of them which were, you know, animated, like the Cyril Smoke, of course, had a big pipe, and there would smoke would come out of his pipe once in a while. And Mandrake Mirrors had a monocle, and there'd be a little gleam on his monocle once in a while. And the whole, it was kind of like going to the Magic Castle or something like that. You know, there's all these different effects in the restaurant stuff. But the thing I thought was the coolest of it was we had this kind of, it was kind of like the expanding room of the Haunted Mansion. It was this rotunda. And you go in there, and the maitre d' kind of host was always kind of like, his nerves are shy. He's kind of freaking out, like, this guy's, you know, having a bad day. And you go in there, there's all these different doors, and he's trying to lead you into your dining area. But every time the door opens, it's like a brick wall, or it's, you know, like a bunch of fish, or, you know, this weird things, right? Like, it'd be a bunch of projection effects and stuff. But the idea was the room would rotate, so doors would line up of different effects or, you know, projection, you know, rooms or whatnot. And then, like, the door you came in would eventually be the one you would leave from. But now it's aligned with a different, you know, doorway. It goes into one of the dining rooms. So that was kind of a fun way. I thought, you know, it probably really slowed down, you know, your throughput of people getting in and out of the restaurant doing that. But it was fun, just the design. But I was like the storyboard illustrator for that, doing all the concept art. And that was a lot of fun. But I said that's as far as I got. And it's right now, like, only one person got a like an internship at Imagineering from that, in graphic design. I think a girl was doing like science or something like that from one of the other teams.
Wow.
I still have my certificate here on my wall. So that was my one taste of Imagineering. But I realized, you know, after, you know, I thought like theme parks and all that was what I really wanted to do. But I think that the thing that I'm really like interested in the most is immersive storytelling. And I think theme parks are a great form of storytelling, like especially like these, you know, like, you know, Not Scary Farms coming up. I love haunted houses and that form of storytelling. And I've been working as an environment artist in video games now for the last almost 18 years. And I love this designing and building an environment that, of course, in mine, it's virtual. So you go through it in a game or in a virtual reality or something, but it's a fun, you know, a way to do like a, to tell a story, you know, like through an environment, and you kind of control what the person sees and experiences as they go through this environment. And I think that's what I really have a passion for, is that kind of immersive storytelling, and whether it be a video game or a theme park or anything else. So, but yeah, but that, that's what I've been doing, you know, since my time at Disney, is working in video games.
Wow.
And then,
go ahead.
One thing I wanted to plug too, while we're on here, is my virtual Indiana Jones project.
Yeah.
If you guys are cool talking about that, I thought this would be a good venue for that. So after then, and this is the funny part, but after Fantasmic, and this was like, you know, 18 years ago when I did the Fantasmic training video, I thought it'd be fun to do Indiana Jones adventure, because I had the blueprints and I, you know, walked the track and I was there when the ride first opened. So I started kind of building that ride, and then for years I just didn't touch it. And just recently, these last few years, I've actually gone back to finish it. But once I know a lot more now than I did then, and now there's these virtual reality headsets, which, you know, allow you to do a lot more than before. It was just going to be like a YouTube video or something like that. So I basically have built the entire Indiana Jones ride based on the blueprints to scale on the computer. And I have it set up where you can get in the Jeep. You can ride through, you know, the Indiana Jones figures are in there. It's all set to the music. And you can ride it wearing the Oculus Rift headset. And I'm doing kind of as a like a fan project. I have a few other friends from the game industry that have been helping me out. But we're getting really close to being done. I put a few videos out on YouTube showing the progress. And again, we're just doing it as kind of like a fan, you know, kind of a love letter to the attraction. And again, it's kind of my chance to kind of do a little more of that kind of Imagineering type work, but, you know, as a virtual kind of tribute to the ride. Because I always thought the Indiana Jones ride was great. I always, you know, love going on that ride. So we did this virtual version. And because it's a, you know, VR video game kind of experience, I've added a lot more effects and done a lot of things that, you know, you can't do in a physical ride. To try and plus it a little bit. So that's something I'm trying to get done, hopefully by end of this year.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. We'll have to, so is there, how can people find that?
Yeah, I can give you guys some links if you have like show notes or something like that.
Yeah. But,
or you can just go to my, you know, my website. It's my name, ryanbachelor.com, and you know, bachelor's B-A-T-C-H-E-2-L-S-E-R. Or you just search Virtual Temple of the Forbidden Eye on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, all the social media for the project that I've been kind of documenting our progress and all that. And I'm hoping here in October to have, I have two development videos out. I'm going to have a third one sometime in October, which is going to be focusing on the big pit scene. That's what I'm working on right now, the bridge and the big Mara face. I'm trying to get that all finished right now. It's getting really close. I mean, you can ride through it. It just, there's a lot of polish. I'm just polishing, you know, some of the art decor and the sound effects and some of the other special effects in it. And once I get that all done, then I'll do probably like a YouTube ride through. And then I want to get the actual Oculus Rift, build out. You know, for anybody who has an Oculus and wants to play it, they can often have some areas where people can download it. And they can just play with their Oculus Rift and actually go through the ride.
Cool. I have to tell my son, he has the virtual, you know, the whole thing. He does all that. So
that's amazing. I can't believe all of this. And you, plus you have that series on ABC, The Bachelor. It's amazing.
Yeah.
This is amazing. All the stuff that you're doing. any other things you want to say about your time at the resort?
Oh man, like what I said, if you want to talk about stories, I have like a bunch of crazy stories dealing with guests and weird things that happened there. But probably the best thing that came out of it was I just met a lot of great people. I mean, that was probably the best thing about working at Disneyland. I made, you know, a lot of friends who I still keep in contact with. You know, a lot of really good times there. So it was definitely a great experience.
And you were there from 93, you said, right?
Yeah, 93. And then I left in July of 2006. Because I worked a lot of different side jobs when I was in entertainment. And then eventually I couldn't do it anymore. They wanted me to work too much, so I had to quit.
Right. Otherwise, I'd
stay a little longer. But it just got too hard.
So you were there. Were you there the day? Were you there for Halloween 1994, the Rick Dees party?
You know what? Where was I working that day?
That was Halloween 1994.
That's when everybody got in there for, if you wore a costume, you got in free, right?
Yeah.
I remember that. I don't remember particularly what I did though. It's where I remember.
It was a weekday.
Yeah, I might have come that night or something like that, but I remember everybody's being pissed off. It was just like there's all kinds of crazy stuff. Like in the break room, everybody was complaining about all the issues they had to deal with. And because people came hard, they didn't pay, they didn't care. So people were like, I think somebody pulled like a Topia car off the track and was trying to drive it around, and like all this crazy stuff was going on.
When did you make the switch to show support?
Beginning of 2001.
Okay. So, all right. So you can skip this one if you would prefer, but one of the things I usually ask about people, because you have experience on the river. Christmas Eve 1998.
Oh, yeah.
Were you there that day? Or
you know what? The weird thing was that was the first time I got Christmas Eve off. Was that day. I worked every Christmas Eve, and I finally got it off, and I was home, and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Good.
So my family's like, somebody died at Disneyland. I'm like, what?
Good
and
for you.
Died on the river. And in the river, I was one of the trainers on the Mark Twain at that time.
Yeah.
Bring it up. I actually had like a lot of involvement in that. Like, and I knew all the guys who were on the dock who were driving the boat that day. And so anybody knows that's what the Columbia accident where the cleat broke off.
Yeah.
Hit one of the guests in the face. Yeah, it was rough. I mean, like, the Columbia was down for like a year or so, but basically they changed it, the whole docking procedure for Mark Twain and Columbia because of that.
Right.
So I was one of the trainers on Mark Twain Columbia when we reopened, and then I don't know how it happened, but I ended up being the working lead for the first four shifts once the boats reopened to the public.
Okay.
So so I was down there overseeing all the docking, dealing with everybody, like, because that was a big deal when the boats came back, and basically everybody lost their knowledge who knew the big boats, and you had to get reopened like a new attraction. You had to be retrained. And before it was just one person would just throw the bow line on. Now it's three people have to agree the boat stopped. There's a person on the dock, a person on the boat, and then the operator of the boat.
Yeah.
And a whole system of ringing bells, and everybody has to agree that the boat has stopped before the line gets put on. Plus the lines are now on the boats. Before, the mooring line that was used for docking was on the actual dock, which probably wasn't the best idea because anybody could just go over there and put it on. Now the person on the boat has to hand it to the person on the dock.
Yeah.
But we had a whole new system. So I like actually got the bronze Spirit of Disney Award for my role in training and being the lead on the reopening of the boats. I should have brought that up earlier. that was my biggest probably award or recognition I got working there in attractions was reopening the big boats.
Yeah, back then, I believe Christmas Eve when the park would still close early, relatively early compared to the rest of the week, because it was open till midnight every day. Except for Christmas Eve. So that was like the one day I had off that week. Because Lynn and I know all the, we know all the custodial people that were there. It's amazing. All the procedures got changed and everything. I mean, the Columbia had operated all those years without anything bad like that, on that level. And then you got to change everything because things had just gotten to a point where something like that happened. And less than 5 years later, there was an accident on Thunder Mountain. And then after that, things really got cleaned up. And, it's you haven't had that problem since, you know?
So, yeah, because, yeah. Yeah, but, the other ones, especially that other one, was really rough. You know, there's photographs that leaked of the train and the car. You know, I don't know how, but if you go online, you can find pictures of that front car just completely smashed in.
Yeah. I mean, they're not pleasant things to talk about, but, you know, they happened. And fortunately, there's a good record again since, you know, and it was a pivotal moment, I believe. And of course, the park management got changed after that. And, you know, then they started preparing for the 50th anniversary and everything. And so it got better. Things got better, thankfully. Anything else, maybe, I mean, everything else would have to be less serious than that. So if you have anything else you want to add.
To think of some good stories to end on that are safe for the podcast. I mean, there's so many crazy things. Is there any a certain attraction you guys want to know about?
Just any of them, yeah. Something you haven't talked about yet. Bear Band or Tiki Room or something.
Oh, man. See, probably one of the craziest things I heard about happening at the park, and I'll tell the story, and it's, I'm going to apologize in advance, but like basically what happened was Indiana Jones, and it was another cast member, it wasn't me, and he tells a story, and I think it's one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. There's a tower. You know, every attraction has a tower where you basically have all the cameras and you watch people on the ride. You have the show controls in there to power the ride up and all that kind of stuff. On Indiana Jones, the doorway is right by the stairs. If you leave from the south side of the station, you go up the staircase and down these stairs, you go past the door that leads into the tower. And I guess it's always unlocked. So he's in there in this tower and he can't leave. He's, you know, watching all the cameras, safety position. And this big woman comes barging in there and she's all, "Where's the bathroom?" And he's all, there's no bathroom in here. There's one by the tiki room. And she's all, "I got to go. Where's the bathroom?" He's all, "Okay, well, there's an employee cat. If you go downstairs, the employees can take you backstage. There's an employee bathroom." She's all, "No, I got to go right now. It's an emergency." And he's all, "Well, there's no bathroom in here. But, you know, if you want to go downstairs." And he says, and then this woman just basically squats on the floor right there in the tower next to him. And just does her business there on the floor. And he's like sitting there in his tower, watching this happen, like screaming. It's going, "Ah!" You know, and she's just sitting there relieving herself on the floor as he's, you know, in the tower and he can't leave. And then she left. And then he's stuck in here, you know, with, you know, this big old fudge muffin there on the ground. And he had to call like a custodial. I don't know if you guys know who had to show up for that, but like, up and sanitize and deal with it and all that. And I security got her. And, you know, I guess it's just, it was like a medical emergency. And I guess, you know, they didn't like kick her out or anything. But that was one of the craziest things I ever heard of a customer having to deal with.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I've heard the story has been passed down.
It definitely happened because it happened at least once. Mm-hmm. Because I remember that it happened. I didn't have to clean it up, but because I did work indie for a while in custodial, you would have two people dedicated to just Indiana Jones. But I remember somebody else in the department having to clean it up. So it happened at least once, which is not surprising considering how long. I mean, before they were doing, you know, fast passes and lightning lanes and all that, you know, how long people were waiting. And in their mind, they're way out in they're so far down in this cave, in this temple, they're so far from, you know, the nearest restroom must be over at the Adventureland entrance or something like that.
And basically, you know, it is.
It's like, no, there's one right around behind the stairs here. It's not really public, but we let people use it, you know, because they're so far from civilization. But yeah, it's, I like how you brought up a custodial tie-in story.
So just to sum it all up,
I hope our people aren't eating while eating while listening to the podcast.
Whenever I think of soyo, I always think of that that like bird seed stuff that you would put on like vomit and stuff. Like
Sani sorbits, yes.
Yeah, like on Thunder Mountain, whenever we had like an issue, with some kid would throw up or something. You guys would show up and put that bird seed stuff on it.
Yep. That stuff would be the container would be two levels or two thicknesses of bags, two bags, but the smell of the Sani sorbits would still permeate wherever it was being stored. So that's how powerful that stuff was. But yeah, I don't know if they even use it at the park anymore because the surfaces have all changed, and it's good on slurry, but it's not so good on stamped concrete.
Oh yeah.
So
brick.
Or paving stones or anything like that. But yeah. Well.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. We'll definitely put links in our show notes so people can check out what you're doing now and your project you have going on.
That'd be great. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm hoping I got a few other things I got to finish right now, and I'm hoping the next month I can really get a lot more Indiana Jones finished and, get it out there so people can see it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, thanks for inviting me to be on the show. This is fun.
Okay. Well, that concludes our episode, but there's still more.
But wait, there's more.
I really had a good time chatting with Ryan. He was there a lot of the time that we actually, he was there during the time that we were there. And it was a very unique time to be working at Disneyland for sure.
Yeah, that was, I'm sure that we crossed paths and, saw each other around and all that stuff.
Who would have known back then, seeing these people backstage or on stage that we'd be interviewing them in a podcast? Just crazy, huh?
That's strange how life turns out.
So I always say that I will read our reviews when we get them, and we have a new review. And this one is titled The Best Podcast.
Ooh.
This is 5 stars from Jeff Bingford. Probably butchering that. Sorry, Jeff. Okay, it says, I have been listening to Ken and Lynn for a number of years, and I just love the show. I am not sure that the experiment with the new format for delivering the news works as well as the old format, though Ken's voice... Ken's deep, rich voice is perfectly suited for delivering Disney news, which is then always commented on by Lynn's calm, assuring tone. Thank you for both continuing to enrich the ears of your faithful listeners. Well, thank you.
I'm glad that you had positive things to say about the podcast. Thank you very much. And that, you had good things to say about my voice. In my daydreams, people pay me money to record things for them. I'm willing to do that, by the way, folks. If you contact me. We tried, every other episode is current events, and I've been reading most of the stories, and then Lynn's adding his comments. And when we have our live chats, he's with our Patreon supporters, he's monitoring the chat room and giving their comments. Last time we did it, I should reiterate that. Lynn was under the weather the most recent time, so we reverted back to the old format. But we've gotten positive feedback on us switching off on the stories. So for like we did the previous episode of current events. So I don't know. We'll see. We're always Lynn especially, you know, I care about the quality of the podcast, but Lynn especially is always looking for ways of plussing the podcast. And so we rely on people's feedback to tell us what, you know, what they like and what's good and what, you know, suggesting things we might want to try. So,
we'd love your comments. And if you'd like to reach out to us, thesweetspot@gmail.com. And we'd always love to hear from you.
Yes. Thank you so much for letting us know what your thoughts on the podcast are.
Yeah. And also, if you'd like to follow us, we're on social media and we have those links at our website. I'm trying to do more on Instagram. I've been doing a feature where I feature a book once a week. I feature a book from my library of Disney books.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of fun, get a lot of good feedback. So if you're into Disney books and you maybe want some new ideas for some new ones, I'm always showcasing one. And you can follow me on Instagram, search The Sweet Spot or Lynn Barron, and you'll find me there.
Lynn, by the way, if there's any chance that Luke doesn't want your Disney collection of books, I'll gladly take them off your hands should anything happen to you. I hope that never happens. May you live long and prosper, but you should live and be well. But you know, just in case, I was telling you, I'm willing to take those on if you need someone to care for those books. So
noted. We have that noted.
It's quite the collection. I mean, I thought I had a collection, but Lynn's really got a great collection. So do follow along.
It's more along the line of ridiculous, but
I haven't quite gotten the hand of Instagram yet. I'm there, but I really don't have the hang of it yet. But you know, I am on Facebook and Twitter, you know, and Lynn's on both of those as well. And you can join our Facebook group. There's the Sweet Spot Facebook group. So if you join us there, that'd be really great.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk with you next time.